I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'm so proud to be teaming up with Fitbit again in 2020. I want to continue on my path of self-discovery and set myself new challenges this year. Often it's only when we're tested that we're awakened to our true potential. I recently completed a 12K run in the Swiss Alps, something I never thought I could do. But with Fitbit by my side, I'm able to stay focused on my health fitness journey, continue to be motivated to go after my goals and to track my progress too. And with that, I'm surprising myself every single day. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Clodagh Campbell. Clodagh was adopted as a baby and lived a wonderful life with her adopted mum and dad. When she was 16, Clodagh's mum told her that she knew her biological family, but Clodagh was happy and didn't want to know anything further at the time. But a year later, she felt like she was ready. Her mum and dad sat her down and told her that her mum's family were her biological family. Today, Clodagh speaks to me about how she got through that time and everything she's learned since then. Clodagh, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It feels so special to be here.
Yeah, like I feel like I know you because we've followed each other for a while since you first got in touch and we've had loads of conversations on the phone and it's just so amazing to see you in real life. It's funny, I was planning this season of the podcast and I took out a piece of paper and I wrote down adoption story. It's something that I hadn't spoken about on the podcast before. And that was at around 8 or 9 o'clock at night and I went to bed. And then the following morning I checked my messages and there was a DM from you. You're on holiday in India.
Africa.
And you had sent me your story, which I thought was just, it was in a matter of hours.
It's so funny, really. Something happened to me. I was in Africa with my mum and my little two-year-old daughter, and it just happened. Like, I didn't plan it. I didn't think about sending you the message. Just something clicked in my brain, and I just felt this, like, sense of, like, going for what I wanted. And I had had this idea in my mind for so long of speaking about my story. And then I just went to your Instagram page and just sent you a message and thought about what I was going to say as I was typing it and just pressed send. And afterwards I thought, what have I done? You know, is she even going to read my message? Will she even see it? But it just really felt like the right time to take a leap because I'd been thinking about sharing my story for such a long time.
Your story is very personal to you. You haven't spoke about it publicly before. So thank you so much for choosing my podcast to talk about it. Tell us a little bit about what life was like for you growing up.
So I was adopted by my mum and dad when I was 2 weeks old. And they were very loving, caring, supportive parents. You know, my relationship with them was the same as my relationship, that my friends' relationships with their parents just felt very normal. I don't ever remember being told that I was adopted. It was just something I always knew. So obviously they sat me down when I was little and told me, but I don't remember that and it wasn't a shock to the system. So growing up was great. I had a gorgeous family. I had beautiful friends. And of course, being adopted flicked through my mind from time to time, but I felt very happy within my family and I loved my parents and I didn't wonder too much about, you know, my biological family or, you know, where I had been for the first 2 weeks of my life. Of course, it did impact me and it's easier to recognize that now looking back. But I remember feeling quite anxious as a child, even as a young child from the age of 7 or 8, and feeling unsafe in my relationships and having this sense of this fear of being rejected by people that were special to me. So being rejected by my friends, by boyfriends, you know, when I was a teenager and started you know, having these little innocent relationships. I remember when I was about 7 or 8, somebody new came into our class in school, and that really shook me, that change and that fear that my friends might perceive this person to be smarter than me or funnier than me or more fun to hang around with. So it definitely did impact me growing up, but it wasn't something that I spent too much time thinking about. Then fast forward to about 16, I was about 16, and I was going to the Gaeltacht for 3 weeks. My mum and dad brought me down to Kerry, where I was going to the Gaeltacht, and we spent a weekend there together beforehand. And one of the evenings, my dad had gone out for a stroll, and I was in the hotel with my mum, and I was reading a book, and just happened to be a fictional book about adoption. But in this book, the lead character who was adopted had an open adoption with her family, her biological family. I just remember making some offhand comment to my mum, just saying, that's a bit silly, isn't it? You know, why would they do that? Why would they have contact? To me, it just was baffling. It just didn't seem like something that I would have wanted to do. But whatever happened in that moment for my mum, she just broke down and started to cry and just blurted out that actually I knew who my biological family were as well. So she phoned my dad, I think, in a panic. She didn't mean for us to have this conversation. Obviously, it was something that she had known about for 16 years, and they had been, I suppose, keeping from me in a way. But they made that decision, you know, with my biological family, I think, to protect me. Mm. I think they thought they would tell me at a time that I would understand what it meant. And, you know, I was getting on really well in school. I was getting on really well in life in general. And I think just as the years went by, there just never was a right time. And then they thought they wouldn't rock the boat, you know, in my latter half of secondary school. They'd wait until I'd done my exams. So that night when my dad came back and my mum was really upset, I just kind of said, I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to know. This is too big for me right now. And that was fine. Like, I went to the Gaeltacht. I had an absolute ball.
And were you thinking about it when you went off, or did you kind of just block it out?
I just blocked it out, to be honest. Mm. I don't remember thinking about it at all. I think it was probably just too big for me to process, especially at that age, you know, 16.
And had you ever, like, growing up, thought about your biological mum and wondered about her?
Maybe a little bit. I remember walking down a street one day and looking around me and thinking, do people look like me? You know, am I walking by someone that's biologically related to me? And I remember having thoughts of excitement about having my own family in the future, to have somebody that's, like, biologically connected to me. Mm. So I remember having those little thoughts, but there was never, ever a time that I wished to be with my biological family. I felt so safe in my family with my mum and dad, and I adored them. And they adored me. And I grew up knowing that I was this gift in their lives, and they always made me feel that way.
And you were an only child. You didn't have brothers or sisters.
No.
It was just the three of you.
Yeah.
And you were obviously so close.
Yeah, we were. And they spoiled me. And I just always knew how loved I was. So I never wanted to be with another family. In fact, I always felt that it worked out that way for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, that I was meant to be with them.
You even knew that then, like, as a kid, that this had happened for a reason. That's very powerful to kind of be connected to that when you're so young.
Yeah, I did. I genuinely felt that way. And I can feel myself getting a little bit emotional saying that. But that's just how I always felt. And I know that they always felt that way too.
And so you went off to the Gaeltacht, and then you came home and just carried on as normal. Your mum at this point knew that you didn't want to talk about it any further, and you didn't want to know any more information.
Yeah, so I don't remember over the next year if we ever talked about it. I feel I just pushed it out of my mind completely, and my parents probably just waited for me to tell them I was ready for more.
And what year would you have been in at this point? Like third or fourth year?
Third or fourth year, okay. Yeah. So about a year after the Gaeltacht and after that conversation, one evening I overheard my mum on the phone, and she was talking to somebody, I think one of her sisters or one of her siblings, about something. And I can't even remember what it was, but it was just something that I didn't know about. So she was talking about something that I had no awareness of, and just everything just bubbled up inside of me. I felt anger. I felt fear, and it just all burst out of me, and I just demanded to know what else that they'd been keeping from me. I just had this overwhelming sense that a lot of secrets had been kept from me, and feeling really scared in that knowledge and also really angry. So my poor mum got it. I think my dad was out at work, or he was out for the evening. And I just said, I want to know, you need to tell me, you know, it's only fair. So my mum rang my dad and he came home and we sat down. And I remember it so clearly, sitting down together, the three of us on like the one couch, and them with their arms around me and just saying, I need to know, I need to know. I think I had been holding it all in for so long that it just burst out of me. Mm-hmm. But subconsciously I had been doing that. It wasn't something that was in my awareness.
And in the time that your mum had said, you know your biological family, were you thinking about who they might be?
So I remember having one thought, and I thought of this woman who was in our lives, you know, just wouldn't have been in our lives that much, or we wouldn't have been that close to her. But she was in my mind, I remember one time, and wondering if it was her. And I don't know why I thought that. It was really strange. And there was a part of me that didn't want it to be her. Mm. And I remember one time after that, the time in Killarney, meeting her and she saying something to me about how lucky I was and that my parents were so loving and supportive to me. And I was thinking, is that her trying to tell me something? But apart from that, I don't think so. Mm. I really don't think so.
So when you were sitting on the couch then, in that moment, were you expecting your mum and dad to say it was this person?
A little bit. Mm. Yeah. And it wasn't that person. So they were trying to say to me, look, can we sleep on it? Can we talk about this tomorrow? We don't want to just for this to come out when you're feeling really angry and really emotional. We want to talk about it. It's a big thing to take in. But I was stubborn and I wouldn't let them away with it. So finally they told me that I knew my biological family because my mum's family were my biological family. And my biological parent was one of my mum's siblings.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it just, Georgie, it was the biggest shock, like such a shock. I just had never considered that that might be the way it was. And it wasn't a bad shock. It was just, I had no idea. Mm. And it's funny thinking back about it now, because there are family resemblances. You know, a few times over in my life, people would stop mum and I when we're shopping together, people that didn't know us, and they'd say, oh, you know, I can see the resemblance between the two of you. It's in your eyes. And we just used to smile at each other, and it was like a private joke, but actually I didn't know just, you know, the extent of that.
And can you remember when your parents said your mum's sibling is your parent? What can you remember what your first thought was? Or was it like, oh my God, I'm related
by blood?
Yeah, I think I remember like thinking of my granny and thinking, she's actually my granny. And I never, it's funny that I had that thought, because I never considered her not to be my granny. I never considered my cousins not to be my cousins. But I remember having this sense of, but they're actually properly my cousins. They're actually properly my granny and granddad and my aunts and uncles. And I've, you know, from time to time when I've been thinking of having this a biological connection with someone, I've had it all this time.
So did you feel relieved?
I think in those days I just felt shocked. Mm. It was such a big thing for me to process. We sat down that night, and after they told me, they rang you know, my biological parents, and they said, we've told Clodagh, and you know, we'll just give her some time to process it, and then we'll think about what's next. But they took out this brown paper envelope, and they took out these photos of, you know, the week that I had been born, and photos of me in the hospital with my biological parent and my name tag from the hospital. And they told me the story of, you know, how I had been named and what happened, you know, when I was born, and just all these missing pieces of the puzzle that I don't think I knew I desperately wanted to know. But in that moment, it just felt it just felt like all of the missing pieces were coming together.
Mm. And who picked your name?
My biological mum. Yeah.
And did you know that you had a name when you went to your adopted parents? Or did you think that they picked your name?
I don't remember, to be honest. I think we had this conversation at one point or another. And I think, you know, when you're in school, in primary school, that's often a little activity you'll do, like, where did your name come from or what's your family history? And I know that afterwards my mum said that she never lied to me. She just told me the answers in a roundabout way, if you know what I mean. So if I said, do you know my biological mother? Do I look like her? My mum would answer in a way that felt truthful to her, but that, I suppose, wouldn't reveal the whole truth. Because it was really hard for her to keep that in all that time, and for my dad. And I know that every so often they'd all meet and they'd talk about it, and maybe one person at that time would think, you know, it's time now, or another person would say, well, what about Clodagh? She's only 14, or she's only 16, or, you know. So they never, ever kept the information from me out of menace. It was just that they loved me so much, all of them, and they just wanted the best for me. And they were really afraid that the news would come as a huge shock, and that that would, I suppose, destabilize me in a way.
And had you had a close relationship with your mum's siblings' family growing up?
Yeah, I did. I did. You know, I knew all my mum's family really well. We all lived quite close together. And, you know, it's funny, in being told that I had my biological family were part of my mum's family, not only did I gain biological parents, I also gained biological siblings, who I thought previously were my cousins, and I always adored them. But this new knowledge then that they were my brothers and sister, it was just huge. And I remember a couple of days later, after my mum and dad and I had this conversation, my mum and I went and we met with my biological family. And I just remember, like, looking at these people with this new lens, like looking at them in a new way, and just feeling so much love for them, but also just so much shock, because it was still so new and I was trying to make sense of it.
And did you feel a lot of love around that time?
I felt really supported, definitely. And I remember talking to, you know, some of my best friends as well, and everyone was so supportive. But also there was a big part of me that felt quite lonely, because I didn't know anyone else. None of my friends were adopted. You know, no one I knew well was going through a similar experience. And as much as my friends were there for me and my family were there for me, I did feel quite alone in it, in a sense, as well. And that's, Georgie, I've always knew that I would tell my story, because I don't want other people to feel that way. And that's always been this driving force behind me. You know, I'm a psychologist, and as part of my training in my master's and my doctorate, I studied adoption and researched adoption, because there was always this huge part of me that wanted to support other people in the journey that I'd been through, and I didn't want them to feel alone the way that I did.
And growing up, did you know anybody else that was adopted?
It's funny, I remember my mum telling me about this other girl who I didn't know, but she told me she was adopted, and she had known her, my mum knew her parents, her adoptive parents. So I always had this awareness of this other person who I didn't know, but who was a similar age to me. But not really. I didn't really know that many people. And I think, I know for my family, it wasn't like we necessarily went around and advertised that I was adopted.
Okay.
You know, everybody knew, and I would tell my friends. But, you know, if we met people, say if I made friends on holidays, you know, we wouldn't say, oh, well, actually, I'm not biologically, you know, my mum and dad's daughter. It just, because it was so normal, we just didn't talk about it that much. And it wasn't that I felt I couldn't talk about it. It was just my normal.
I'll get back to my conversation with Clodagh in just a minute. But first, I wanted to give you an update on the benefits I'm seeing from using my Fitbit Versa 2. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better, to understand your health with data and insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I love being able to track my sleep, keep an eye on my resting heart rate over time, as well as capture key stats from my workouts. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board as it helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Now back to Clodagh.
So around that time then, when you found out and you were going to meet or see your biological parent for the first time and your siblings, and you know, this is your story, we're not going to talk for anybody else, but how what was that time like?
I just remember having this new lens and seeing these people who I had known all my life in a new way and feeling so much love, particularly for my brothers and sister.
A kind of closeness.
Yeah. And I think in a way that I felt a little bit lonely in times, maybe it was widening my circle, in a sense.
Because you'd been an only child, yeah. So everything had kind of changed.
Yeah.
Now.
And you know what? I never really wanted brothers and sisters growing up. I loved my family. You know, my dad passed away 6.5 years ago, and that was the first time in my life that I wished that I had grown up with siblings within my family, you know, my mum and dad and I, because that's a really difficult time when you lose somebody. And for that reason, hopefully in the future we can give our little girl, you know, a brother or sister. But up until then, I never had a yearning for that. My mum was really good in that my friends were always over and my cousins were always over, and we'd all meet in my granny's house, you know, very frequently. So it wasn't lonely in terms of not having people to play with. But there was something special. Even saying all of that, there was something special about gaining these siblings. But you know, Georgie, it wasn't just easy. It was difficult as well. Definitely this sense that something had been kept from me, that really impacted me. It felt like my safety was shattered in a way, that these people that I loved and trusted most in the world, for their own reasons and because they were trying to support me, they had kept this huge thing from me. And as I said earlier, being adopted, that never felt like a huge thing because I knew about it all my life. But this huge piece of information that I didn't know about being kept from me, that felt really difficult. And that's definitely impacted, you know, the safety that I feel in my relationships. I'm always a little bit worried that people are keeping things from me. And that's something that I've had to work really hard to overcome. It's something that, you know, it's still there in the background a little bit.
And your biological mum, how was she around this time?
I think that there was a huge sense of relief for her that I finally knew. I think it was really difficult for her as the years went by for it to be kind of a secret in a way. And I remember the first day that I met her after gaining this knowledge, she gave me a pearl necklace and she said, "I've been keeping this for you for a long time and I'm so happy that I can finally give it to you, and this means a lot to me, and I wanted to show you just how much that means to me." And I think that that was something that she had from her mum, and she wanted to give it to me.
So nice. It's just like, it must have been so hard for you, but it's just such a unique experience and something that, you know, not a lot of people will ever understand what you all must have been going through at that time.
Yeah, and you know, as you said, I can only speak from my experience, but it was difficult for everyone in a way. You know, it's been really positive and we all have gained so much from it, but there's been difficulties for us all in navigating our own journey and our own experience through it.
And your biological mum said something to you about when you're all under the same roof.
Yeah, that's when she felt happiest, that that was really special for her, even when I would be there and before I had that knowledge. You know, that was something that she always held on to.
So she was happiest when you guys were together.
Yeah.
So you had siblings now and a sister, which is, I think, such a gift to have a sister. Mm-hmm. Was that exciting?
Yeah, it was. It was. And I was the eldest of them all. But I can't remember the exact time frame, but shortly after I gained this knowledge, they were told as well. Because I think it came to a point where, you know, the secret had been kept for long enough and it was time to let go of the secrecy and for us all to move forward together as an extended family. So it was really, really special to gain them, and I adore them. They're really special. You know, they were all part of my wedding, and my sister is my daughter's godmother. But it's been hard to navigate from being cousins to being siblings, and, you know, to all of a sudden, even for them to say, well, I have another sister. It hasn't been easy the whole way through, but I suppose when you're in that situation, you do the best you can. Mm. And I suppose, I think for a long time, I probably didn't share that much of my experience with that many people. I think it was a safety mechanism or a protective thing where I didn't want to come across as weak. And I wanted people to think that I had everything together and that I was managing okay. So because of that, I probably didn't share how I was feeling enough with them. And maybe because of that, at times they felt that I was a little bit distant. Mm. And that was never my intention. It was just me trying to navigate this journey. You know, there were lots of emotions that came up as part of that for me. And, you know, even when I had my little girl, I think as somebody who's adopted, giving birth to your own child, and I think especially because she was this little girl and this physical representation of what I had been when I was given up for adoption, that really hit me hard.
Was it very much on your mind when you were pregnant and when you just, because like giving birth is hard enough, isn't it? Without kind of all of these extra emotions that you must have been feeling around that time.
Yeah, I felt fiercely protective of her. Like, I just didn't want to let her out of my sight. And there was a part of me that kept thinking, how could I ever part with her? I couldn't imagine anything worse in the world. Like, she's part of me, and I could never give that up. And it took me a long time. It's only in recent months that I realized and I've been able to admit to myself that if it was for her benefit, if there was a reason that I couldn't give her everything, that I would give her up.
Yeah. Oh my God, you have me bawling here. I think it's because I have a little girl as well, you know. So how did you deal with anxiety and any sort of emotions that this brought about during that time?
I don't think I had an awareness of what it was for, you know, in my childhood and my teens. I think it all kind of came to a head after I learned about who my biological family were. And in the kind of the months after being told, my mum and dad organised for a therapist to come to our house, but I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to speak about it. And I felt quite, I didn't want to speak to her about it. It felt too private. But then after my dad died, I went back for therapy. And as part of my training to be a psychologist, we had to do 75 hours of individual therapy and also group therapy. So that's been huge. It's been a huge part of accepting everything and talking about the reasons that I felt anxious and the reasons why I felt unsafe in my relationships, what I was really fearful of and how I felt about myself. You know, I didn't realize it, but I never felt worthy ever. And because of that, I never felt confident, or I never felt like I could speak up. You know, if somebody spoke to me in a mean way, I would never say to them, "Well, wait a minute, you know, don't speak to me like that," or "I don't deserve that." I would never stand up for myself, ever. So going to personal therapy or counselling has just allowed me to work through all of that. And it's probably only in the last year or so that I finally can say that I know my value and I know my worth. And it's, you know, even in work, it's only in the last year that I feel like I can say everything that I want to say. Because I would have held myself back at times out of fear that people would reject me or people wouldn't think what I had to say was important.
So for anybody listening who is thinking about getting therapy to deal with something in their past, You would obviously advise them to do so.
Yeah, I would. I think there's two things. It needs to be at a time that the person's ready for it, because it's difficult. You know, we often say to people when we meet them for therapy, or when I've been in the chair of the person that's there for therapy, that it might get harder before it gets easier. And that's really true. So the time needs to be right, but I also think the person needs to be right. The person that you're going through that experience with, you need to feel safe with them, and you need to feel comfortable in their presence, and you need to be, you know, the right match together, because it's a difficult journey.
And how is your mum now?
My mum is amazing. She and I have a really, really special relationship. She has the most beautiful relationship with my little girl. And she just does everything for us. If I ever need anything, I know she'll never, ever turn me away or never let me down. She's just amazing.
How did she feel when you told her that you were going to come on this podcast?
Georgie, she's just so supportive. She said, "This is your story, and you always said that you were going to tell it. And if now's the right time, do it." She tells me that she's proud of me, that she trusts me, that she has nothing to be ashamed of. And that's a big part of this as well, Georgie. You know, I have felt shame over my life because of this. And it's only now that I can really hold my head up and say that I'm not ashamed. I haven't done anything to be ashamed about, and none of my family have done anything to be ashamed about. But when you're growing up and you're carrying this huge piece of information, or this huge kind of difference in your life, that can feel shameful. But coming here and speaking to you is part of letting go of that shame and telling other people that they don't have to be ashamed either, whatever they're going through or whatever their family circumstances are, or if there are things that are worrying them, they don't need to feel ashamed of it, because people in their lives love them and they are worthy and they're special. And if they can't see that for themselves just now, that they will in time.
You have such a way with words, and the way you speak is so beautiful. What's your life like now?
I often think that if I had known when I was younger what my life would be like, that I wouldn't believe it, because I just feel so blessed in every way. I have a gorgeous family. You know, my husband is so supportive. He's had to be really patient with me at times, but he's a really kind, caring man. My little girl is just... I just couldn't wish for a more perfect little girl to have in my life. I feel so lucky every day for her. And I always stop to think, what have I done to deserve her? You know, my mom is so special to me, my extended family, my siblings, my biological mom, my biological dad, all my friends. I just have such a supportive, caring circle around me. And I think as well, throughout my life, I've been quite a perfectionist. You know, I think I've been trying to prove to the world, but also to myself, that I am worthy. And because of that, I've achieved a lot. You know, it wasn't easy to become a psychologist or to get to where I am now, but all of my journey has helped me with that. And all of my journey has helped me to feel the compassion I feel for other people, and to feel the empathy I feel for other people, and to really have this passion to help other people. You know, and I said earlier that that really stems from wanting to help other people through journeys that might be difficult for them, the way mine was difficult for me.
They were the words that were in my head before you said them, which is, an experience like that would give you compassion and empathy, and you are an absolute gift to us all. Tell us about the Wellness Psychologist Instagram page.
So this is something that I have set up very recently, but Georgie, you would not believe the amount of time and months and years that I've thought about it. And I just was always so fearful because of worries of being judged or being a failure or not being good enough, that I never was brave enough to take that step or to take that leap. And it was always something that was in my heart that I really wanted to do. So finally, after that holiday to Africa, and after reaching out to you and just thinking about how I wanted to live my life, and the desire to live my life in a way that I was true to myself and true to my goals and true to my life purpose in a way, because this is something I've always wanted to do, I finally set it up. And I'm just trying to be as authentic with people as possible and telling people that, you know, life isn't perfect. None of us are perfect, but we're worthy. And people love us, and despite our flaws, because we do, you know, there are things that we're all working towards, and it's hard to navigate that. But people love us despite that, and that's okay. But also to think about the way that we can incorporate wellness into our lives as part of that journey. So say, for example, a big part of my life in recent years is gratitude. And it's just something that I practice every single day. It's something that I, you know, I joke about it, but I kind of force my husband to practice it too, because I always ask him what he's grateful for. And
so how do you do that? Are you just grateful all through the day, or do you take a moment to stop and be grateful?
I think the more you practice it, it becomes more automatic. Mm-hmm. So at the start, certainly, I would stop and think, what am I grateful for today? And I would think of three things that I'm grateful for. And that might be the bar of chocolate that I had, mm-hmm. or it might be a hug from my daughter, or it might be that my husband made dinner. You know, just little things. But then I've really noticed in the last year especially that now the gratitude comes to me in the middle of my day without me consciously stopping to think about it. So I'll be going for a walk on a Sunday, and I'll just stop and say, oh my God, how beautiful is that? You know, we are so lucky for this. Or I'll be sitting down and my daughter will be giving me a little cuddle, and I'll just feel this surge of love in my heart, and I'll just think, like, I'm so lucky to have this moment with her. Or I'll be in work and having a laugh with somebody in work, and I'll just feel that this is so special to have this. Or I'll be with my friends. You know, my friends are such a huge joy in my life, and it will just come to me. But I do stop as well and think, what am I grateful for today? Often in bed when I'm going to sleep, because I think the life of a working mom is pretty busy, mm-hmm. and it might just be for 10 minutes in bed at nighttime that my mind finally slows down a little bit. But I will consciously stop and think about that then in those moments too.
That's what I love about your Instagram page, The Wellness Psychologist, is that it gives you kind of nuggets of information. It's like what Oprah says, those aha moments when you're like, oh yeah. So anyone who's listening should follow, because as we all know from listening to this podcast, you're an amazing person. What was it, do you think, about going to Africa that made you just was it the space to think, or what made you go, number one, I'm going to share my story, number two, I'm going to set up this Instagram page? What changed over there?
It's really funny you ask that, because after my doctorate, I went, my mum and I actually went to India together for a month. And I went, you know, when you think about going to India, and we did a week's, you know, yoga retreat and meditation and mindfulness, there was this part of me that was thinking, I want enlightenment, or I want that aha to happen. Mm-hmm. And it didn't. You know, I was so tired after the 3 years study that I was just exhausted, and we had an amazing time, and it was really special for us to have that time together, because my mum had never kind of been on that type of trip before. I had done a bit of traveling over the years, but it was really special to have that experience together. But I didn't have that moment, that aha moment there. So when I went to Africa with my mum and with my little girl in November, I wasn't expecting it, I wasn't thinking about it. And it was my first time to Africa, and just being surrounded by these people, the most generous, beautiful, kind, caring people that I'd ever been around, just something changed for me. You know, we went to Kenya, and we went on safari, and we went to meet a tribal village, and just everyone we met was just so happy and just so full of love and so welcoming. And then we went to Zanzibar at the end of the journey of the holiday, and just behind our resort there was this local village, and I would bring my daughter in to play with the little kids there every day, because there weren't that many kids in the resort that we were in, and she's just a social little thing. And you know, we couldn't communicate with each other, the children and their parents, they had no English, and we weren't able to communicate in any way except by smiling with, you know, at each other and by laughing. And my little girl was playing with these gorgeous children, and they were so welcoming. And it just made me think, I think something happened for me in that moment where I could see how authentic they were. And it made me think, how authentic am I being in my life? You know, I'm living this beautiful life, but I'm not opening my heart to people in the way that I want to. And the last day before we went home from Africa, it started to rain when we were in the little local village, and three children wanted to walk my daughter back to the resort, and they held their clothes over her head to protect her from the rain. And these children had nothing. And I think just seeing their generosity and how authentic and true and happy they were just really opened my heart in that way that I had been wanting to for so long. And I just let go of the fear when I saw how courageous they were. So it was really meaningful for me. Yeah. Wow.
Thank you so much for sending me that message that night. It's just been so lovely to get to know you over the last couple of weeks, and thank you so much for sharing your story, because I know that it is not easy to tell your story. So I'm so grateful to you for coming on my podcast, and I hope that we will be firm friends, and we have to introduce our daughters.
I was just thinking that I think they will get on so well. They're similar age, they're both little blondies, and my little girl is so social, and I, you know, Pia comes across as just the sweetest little thing, so we totally have to have a play date. I also just want to say thank you for trusting in me and for trusting in my ability to tell my story, because it means so much to me, because I knew I would always tell it, and I knew I would always use my experience to help other people. And this feels like a really big step for me on that journey, but it feels like I'm here for a reason, and this is all unfolded for a reason. You know, exactly as you said, writing down adoption and then without thinking me sending you that message, it just feels like we're here in this moment for a reason.
It was absolutely meant to be, and this is will forever be such a special podcast to me. So thank you so much for your time, and let's keep in touch. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.